Secrets can lead to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding can cause fear. Everyone knows what fear can do. We are here to learn and shine the bright light of truth on these stories. You will know why Show Me Scares.
Hello.
Hello there.
I hope everyone's doing great. I'm Shayla.
And I'm Terry.
Welcome to another episode of Show Me Scares. Thank you very much for listening, first of all.
For sure.
So tonight, or today, whenever you're listening, I guess, we're going to talk about a case from 1880s, Newton County, kind of. It took place in Pineville, but the trial was in Newton County, so let's just get right into it, and then we can discuss other things afterward.
Okay. I like it. Let's do this.
All right. Around 8:20, sorry, p.m. on September 12th, 1883, Dr. Albert Chenoweth, 47 years old, was heading home. His house was about a half a mile from the Pineville Courthouse Square. Halfway home, so not very far, there were 2 shotgun blasts.
Oh.
Yes. They struck the doctor and he was knocked from the buggy. The horses continued on.
Just doing their thing.
Yeah, just going home. They eventually ran into a pole outside of the doctor's house, and that got the attention of his 14-year-old son, Charlie. And so Charlie runs out to investigate and sees the horses have broken loose from the buggy. Dad's not here. Something's weird. So he catches one of the horses and rides back toward town, and he finds his father dead in the road.
Aww.
Yes. So he continues toward town screaming for help. Dr. Duval and the coroner, John Johnson, conducts an inquest, and they find that he was hit with 11 buckshot, all passed through his body, but 3. Those 3 were removed from the body and given to investigators. I don't know that they did ballistics. Can you do ballistics on shotgun anyway?
I don't know, especially back then.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. The next morning, the scene was alive and crazy again.
Mm-hmm.
There are tons of men that are there. Immediately when it happens, there are tons of people there. And then the next morning, they all kind of reconvene again. Tons of people. Which, the scene is completely compromised. Nobody says that in any of the reports. But I don't think that, especially at that time, there was any like keeping the crime scene clean and
no
free
of tape and stuff.
Yeah, because it's like the town just gathers to see what they can figure out.
Yeah.
And so
it's like the game of Clue.
Yeah, but also you have all of these people. It's just something that I thought was odd and wanted to point out is you have all these people that are there talking to each other about what could have happened, and a lot of rumors and theories being thrown around with everybody who is eventually going to be a witness. So there's that. Yeah. They found wadding shot from a shotgun, and some of the brush was whittled down, indicating that that had been the hiding spot of the shooter. Mm-hmm. So they thought they had found that. There were some footprints that they found. They tried to kind of come up with what kind of shoe would have made that. And all this, I don't know how accurate that can be when you can't test the shoes. I guess you can find the shoes and make another print.
Who knows?
But I did not see that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a lot of speculation and a lot of people, again,
talking. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Chenoweth was buried that day. And about 1,000 people attended his funeral.
That day?
That day.
Wow.
And 1,000 people came. That's quick for 1,000 people to show
up. For sure.
He was a prominent citizen who had served as a county official and as a state legislator.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Popular guy.
Seems like it, but I did find this article that I wanted to read because I thought it was very important to the story. And it's just kind of talking about... I'm going to give away a piece of the story that I am getting ready to report anyway in this article, but we'll get there. Dr. Chenoweth was not popular. Although a prominent and useful man, he was a very positive man, and upon the question of the sale of liquor, was by many considered fanatic, taking a prominent and leading part in the suppression of licenses and in the sale of liquors, and in the effort to punish for violations of the law thereupon, and made himself obnoxious to a great many.
Well, there's the reason.
Yes. So, Garland Mann was immediately suspected. And this article goes on to say, Garland Mann, the accused, is said to have dispensed liquors without the formality of a license, which was repeatedly refused him, and has had several trials for violations of the law in that respect, upon each and all of which trials the jury have failed to agree upon a verdict, and Mann is charged to have entertained ugly feelings and to have made ugly threats in respect to Dr. Chenoweth.
Ooh.
Yes, so... other reports claim that he's well-liked and that the community really at this time was thirsty for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
They were ready to go after Mr. Mann. Garland Mann was 45 years old and, like I said, an immediate suspect. The two men had been anything but friends over the years. He lived about 2.5 miles from Pineville on the Elk River. He had been the owner of a saloon in Pineville at one time, and with Chenoweth being the overzealous temperance advocate, the men definitely had a difference of opinions.
For sure, I can imagine.
Chenoweth seemed to single out Mann and almost attack him in any way that he could find possible. It's very strange, and you'll see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 years prior to the murder, Chenoweth had sold Mann a building for which he planned to open a saloon. Something Mann claims was discussed during the negotiations for the sale. So he says Dr. Chenoweth knew the reason he wanted to buy this building and sold him the business. After the sale was final, Chenoweth fought his requests for liquor licenses. He put up roadblocks everywhere that he could to keep him from getting a license to sell liquor in the building that he had sold him to be a saloon.
Why does he care?
He's against liquor. So, Mann ended up being arrested several times, like it said, for liquor sales without licensing, but he was never convicted. A few years after this, a fire had been set to buildings on the Pineville Square, including one that was owned by Dr. Chenoweth. Dr. Chenoweth accused Mann of setting that fire, and apparently he liked to tell everybody he could about this suspicion.
Of course.
He was constantly telling everyone that this guy had committed arson in town and burned all these buildings.
He just knew he did it.
Mm-hmm. Or it seems like there's some kind of vendetta. I don't know why, but something is, to me, seems to be going on. And it could be that this guy wants to make his living from selling liquor, and mm-hmm. he hates that so much. Whatever.
Wow.
Both the doctor and Garland Mann had served for the Union in the Civil War. Mann was wounded at the Battle of Stones River in 1863. This left him with a permanent limp. He was denied his pension and took a trip to Washington, D.C. in May of 1883 to find out why.
For sure. Like,
yes. Well, he discovered when he got there that Dr. Chenoweth,
oh, no.
who was on the local pension board, had written a letter in opposition to his pension application. That's low, shitty. Like, what? To me, that's just insane. What the hell have you got against somebody who
put his time in
and has been wounded in a way that he is, has a permanent limp, so he's, you know,
definitely wounded. Earned it.
And you want to oppose that because you don't like him? I mean,
that's wrong.
Yeah. So, man was seen in town that evening of the murder. One witness said that as a buggy passed, he leaned in and asked him if that was the doctor in that buggy.
Ooh.
After the shots were fired, though, man was gone. He disappeared from town. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw him. That's what the newspaper reported, but he was arrested the next day at his home. So he didn't run.
He didn't go too far.
He was at home. So there's that. At the preliminary trial on September 20th, there was a mob that kind of gathered outside. One newspaper reported that the only reason that they did not incite some kind of violence was that they had a clear lack of a leader. So basically, the reporter's saying this mob is so crazy and they want to do something, but if only they had a leader that could somehow assemble them and get a plan together, they would probably be very dangerous. But
sounds like a decent mob.
Yeah, they're just pissed off and not doing anything.
Just talking amongst themselves.
Yeah. So it was also reported that the lack of evidence in that same article, I mean, even circumstantial, would probably keep it from going to trial, or at the very least, keep him from being convicted, because there was none.
Mm-hmm.
The threat of mob violence was very real, since, like I said, and the prisoner was moved to be jailed at Carthage for his protection.
Oh, interesting.
Man mortgaged his farm to pay for his legal defense team, which was a very good team.
Mm-hmm.
His attorneys believed that he will be released on bond by December and told him, don't worry, you'll be out of here by December. You'll be fine. On December 12th, though, he learned that he would not be released.
Uh-oh.
He said that he would try to remain hopeful and staying in jail would break him financially and his wife and children would have a hard time of it.
Aww.
He had 6 children. The oldest was 14 years old and the youngest was 3 weeks old.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. He was confident that he would be released at his indictment in February, as there was not enough evidence to hold him. In February, he was brought to Pineville for his hearing, and during this time, he was jailed with another man who was also in there for murder. The threat of violence led the sheriff to take these two prisoners from the jail at night and hide them in the woods for protection. I even understood it that maybe he didn't even like take them to a place and hide them. He just took them and they just drove around all night.
That's crazy.
Until daybreak, and then they would go back to the jail.
Oh my gosh.
And go to bed, I guess.
For sure.
At his hearing, he was indicted for murder in the first degree. Wow. And held over without bond.
Oh no.
Yeah. The papers reported that the community was split pretty much in half, with half believing wholeheartedly in his guilt and the other wanting to see him get a fair trial.
Well, he deserves that.
Yep. The trial was given a change of venue to neighboring Newton County, as clearly he can't get a fair trial in his county. I think it was McDonald County. And it was set for the April term. John Kirby, who had killed his brother-in-law, had also been indicted and was taken with man back to the jail in Carthage. Mm-hmm. So he's like a cellmate, let's say. There was another man that was there. There were a few prisoners, but it eventually ended up with man and Kirby being the only two prisoners at one point in this jail. That becomes important later. Man had kept a diary for years, and he continued to do so while he was in jail.
What else you got to do?
When he was taken to Neosho in April to begin his trial, he wrote that he knew of the threats of mob violence. He wanted to let his friends know that should he die, he wished them not to retaliate, as more innocent people might be hurt.
Aww.
He said, "I know I am innocent, and events will prove so in a short time if justice is done."
Interesting.
Yeah. Several witnesses took the stand for the state, testifying to this to seeing man in town on the evening of the murder, and also to him inquiring about the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So let's discuss the testimony, because I have trial transcripts, so I have the actual testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at you go.
The most damning of the testimony for Garland Mann is that of his cellmate, John Kirby, who says that he made a full confession to him while they were in jail.
So you're listening to another murderer?
Yeah. So here's what John Kirby said, his story. "Mann told me that he did kill Chenoweth and that he didn't give a damn. He said that he was sitting on the platform of Thomas Clark's saloon when Chenoweth drove up. After they met, he walked up the street toward Dylan's place. He thought he would go in and see him, but changed his mind as Dylan was talking with his wife. He then went close to Dylan's barn, where there was a double-barreled shotgun placed, which he got. He then went across the hollow by Mr. Barr's, and then across Bradley Branch, going back of the Widow Painter's, and placed himself on a point a certain distance from the turn of the road near the schoolhouse and waited until Dr. Chenoweth came along. About 8 o'clock, Chenoweth came along. Mann, having been there for a few minutes, said he then fixed him and that team and went on and struck out for Tall Timber."
What?
He fixed him and then the team took off.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
The way they talk back then.
Oof. Lord. He said he went home. He said he supposed the gun belonged to Dylan, but he didn't give a damn, and that he was killed all the same. He said he placed the gun in about the same place he found it, that when he got home, he looked at the clock, and it was 9 o'clock. He said that his reason for killing Chenoweth was that he had interfered with his whiskey and pension business, and then he had accused him, Mann, of trying to burn the town. Mann's reason for telling me was that I was in jail and that my evidence would not be admitted in court. In 1876, Mann had a whiskey shebang in Pineville, and one day he took me back of his place and offered me and another man $65 to kill Chenoweth. This is an interesting piece.
Huh.
When the cross, this is not him talking, this is actually just the article. When the cross-examination commenced, the witness claimed to have been taken with a chill and was examined by physicians who pronounced him unable to testify, and the court excused him until he was better.
Oh, come on.
So he gives this testimony, and then the defense stands up to cross-examine him, and he's like, suddenly sick. He can't talk anymore. They did end up doing cross-examination, where he pretty much said, "I didn't lie, I told the truth about everything." Like, that was the extent of the cross. That was pretty much it.
Insane.
But so I also noted the testimony of the Testerman brothers. It's hard to read these newspaper articles. They're not in great shape. And I did that because I suspect them.
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe I shouldn't say that and let you decide that, but I think that that's the only way that I can justify this from the start anyway. So AJ Testerman, this is his testimony. "I reside in the Indian Territory, have lived there 1 year. Before that time, I lived in McDonald County. I know Garland Mann. I knew Dr. Chenoweth. Have heard Garland Mann make a great many threats against Dr. Chenoweth. I have heard so many threats made that I can't give an exact date. The first threat I heard him make was in 1878. He claimed Chenoweth had sold him property, knowing that he was going to sell whiskey in it, and that after he had purchased the property, Chenoweth prevented him from getting his license, and that he was going to shoot the son of a bitch.
Hmm.
On another time, he threatened to kill Abe Price and Dr. Chenoweth for accusing him of burning the town. Another time, he was talking to me and said that he had found a letter from Chenoweth that had knocked him out of a pension and that, by God, he would kill him.
I bet he was mad, though. I mean, jeez.
I'd be pissed. He must have told me at least 500 times that he would kill Chenoweth. He said that he intended to leave for a short time and then slip back to Pineville and kill Chenoweth. Mann told me once, right after Chenoweth's drugstore was built, that he had $300 in gold for any man that would kill him. He said that Bill Maney would do it if he was not in trouble already. He told me one time that he was going to move to his farm, quit drinking, and join the Murphys. And then Chenoweth passed the Narrows on Cowskin River sometime, he would shoot him out of his buggy, roll his body into the river, and go back home. He told me at another time...
He had a lot of threats.
He had watched for Chenoweth the night before and had missed him, but that some night he would kill him and tie him to his horse's tail and let it drag him home.
My...
He told me once that he would kill Chenoweth himself if he could get no one else to do it, and would come in and give up to be hung publicly. He said if he had the son of a bitch out of the way, he would be willing to die. When speaking of killing him at the Narrows, Mann said he would shoot him as near the cross of the Galluses as he could, and would send him to hell before he knew it.
Oh my.
So... that's one of the Testerman brothers. Henry Testerman, his brother, testified to this. I live near Pineville in McDonald County. Have known Garland Mann for 12 years. I knew Chenoweth during his life. In 1878, I had a conversation with Mann concerning Chenoweth. He called me into his saloon and told me that Chenoweth helped to prosecute me in a criminal case I had before the court at that time. He said Chenoweth had sold him a house knowing that whiskey would be sold on the property, and then tried to break him up. He said he wanted him killed and that I was the man to do the job, and that he would pay me for it. I had another conversation with Mann in the spring of 1878, in which he told me he wanted Chenoweth killed and that he would give me $300 to do the job. He said he would put the money in an oyster can or some other tin vessel and would put it where I could find it so that I could not say he gave it to me. I had a conversation with Mann in July last in which he told me he wanted to kill Chenoweth and the damn son of a bitch ought to be killed. Mann wanted me to pass over the bridge on the Pineville and Neosho Road with my hat in my hand, I'm reading straight from the paper and this is hard, as a signal that Chenoweth was coming along in his buggy, and said that he would shoot him in the back with a shotgun loaded with buckshot after he passed the bridge. He wanted me to tear up some paper along the bridge and show it to the people after the excitement raised to make them believe the shot was fired there. I had a conversation with Mann last August, back of Brown's blacksmith shop, in which he said that he was in town to kill Chenoweth and wanted me to give him a signal, and after the shot was fired, to try and make the people believe that moonshiners did it. He said that if I was alone when the shot was fired, I should testify in court that I had seen him a few minutes before going towards home. He said that after he shot Chenoweth, he would stay there until he knew Chenoweth was dead, and then, while on his road home, he would load his gun with grass and leaves and leave it.
Okay.
He said that he would not take it home. In May 1878, he told me my slippers would be a good thing to wear to do the job in because they would leave no tracks. I must have had at least 20 conversations with him at different times.
This isn't good for him.
No, it's not. It's not. But I want to just talk about those testimonies for a minute.
A minute.
They're too perfect to me. They have described
the time, the place,
But not only that, they have described everything about the actual murder in these, like, stories that happened over years. Mm-hmm. In a way to make it seem like he's been planning this for years. And Henry even talks about the tracks and how you should wear slippers because he wouldn't leave tracks. So I just want to say, like, okay, if he's been thinking of this for that long,
he would have got by with it, probably.
I think he was getting away with it. If he had been planning it that long, and also, he's offering all these people money to do it and asking them to testify in certain ways, then why didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he pay somebody to do it? Why didn't he pay someone to say what he wanted them to? If that's true.
Especially, I mean, back then, you'd find people to do that more than now.
Yeah. Well, because now everybody's recording you on their phone, mm-hmm, and turning it over to the cops. Yeah. But, I mean, and which is good.
People back then would do a lot of killing for money, I feel like.
Yeah. So, this is pretty interesting because the only thing that the defense could really do was impeach the testimony of the state's witnesses. I mean, because all the state has are witnesses saying, yeah, he was in town that evening. We saw him in town that evening. He asked if the doctor was in that buggy that went by. Nobody said that buggy that went by at that point was the doctor, mm-hmm, by the way. They didn't know if it was him or not. So that's all they have, is he has made threats in the years before and that he was in town that evening.
And that's it.
That's it. And that's where we are on how this man came to be tried for murder. Wow. On that evidence. So the defense witnesses, let's talk about those for a moment. Here is A.J. Watkins' testimony, very short and to the point. He said, Henry Testerman said to me one day while I was cutting wood, and he was hauling the wood, that for $400 he would clear Garland Man, which is cheaper than the damn lawyers could do it. Testerman's reputation for truth and veracity is bad. So this guy says, hey, this Testerman dude told me that he could be paid to say whatever you wanted him to say. So maybe you shouldn't be listening to his testimony.
Oh, why?
Yes. This guy, J.M. White, he knows Tom Wilson. I don't know why that's important, but and I think it's because maybe this guy could be another suspect. But I didn't see his name many other places. So, remember him telling me at Pineville several years ago that every dog has his day, that Garland Man had ruined him, and that perhaps his time would come next. He also knows Henry Testerman and that his reputation for truth and veracity is bad. Samuel Smith gave this testimony, and it was in regards to testimony given by Robley Wills, who said that he had heard Mann threaten the life of Chenoweth in the company of Samuel Smith. So Samuel Smith takes the stand for the defense. He says that he, Robley Wills, and Garland Mann were out fishing. I can't remember what they were doing, but they come back. Wills, this is his words now, Wills went on home, and Mann and myself went into the house. Robley Wills told me at or near his farm that Garland Mann had told him in my presence that he was going to kill Dr. Chenoweth if he did not quit talking about him, and he said, you heard him, Smith. I cannot remember any such conversation taking place. If it had, I would definitely remember it. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, this guy's saying, I was there. I was not. Because if this had happened,
I would remember.
I would remember it. So he's making shit up. Which is interesting to me. It sounds a little conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know what this man guy has done to these people. But it just seems like the whole community is kind of shitty. Like they're all
I feel like they all like the dirty. Doctor. So they're all just jumping on that train.
Maybe. I don't know. J.W. Brunk, he became the attorney for Alf Kirby. And he testified, his testimony was a little interesting. He lives in Pineville. He's an attorney. He knows Henry Testerman. First knew him in 1877. Henry Testerman asked me in Pineville, Missouri, at the Lamance Hotel, "What have you fellows done with Garland Mann? Will he give any money for a witness?" I told him I do not know. He then said for $500 or $800 he would clear Garland Mann. He said he was a convict and an outlaw and didn't care anyway. On the day of Garland Mann's arrest, I, in company with Sheriff Seaborn, went to the man's house. Seaborn found a shotgun above the north door of Mann's house and also a breech-loading rifle. The shotgun belonged to me. I took it there last July. I took Alf Kirby into my room at the commercial hotel and told him that I understood that old Abe Price had hired John, his brother, to swear Garland Mann's life away.
Oof.
There's clearly some kind of conspiracy going on here. Like, unless these people are just making shit up on both sides. And still, even at that point, how can you say this guy is getting a fair trial? Everybody's crazy. Jarrett Watkins said that while there had been animosity between the men in the past, Mann had recently told him that Chenoweth wasn't half as bad a man as he thought he was and that he had not beat him out of his pension. So he had recently told this guy, he's so bad. He didn't get me out of my pension. Everything's fine. Whatever.
I don't know. I am so confused. I right? need to believe.
This is the biggest shit show I've ever
Can
seen.
Can you imagine the jury?
Yeah.
What?
Wait, what? You're all liars. The wife of Garland Mann, Alice Mann, took the stand. Mm-hmm. I am the wife of Garland Mann, live about 2.5 miles from Pineville. We have lived in McDonald County since 1868. We were married in Kentucky on the 16th of April, 1868. Have 6 living children. The oldest is 14 years old, the youngest 3 weeks. The day that Dr. Chenoweth was killed by my husband. What? I just said that, didn't I? That's not what she said.
I hope not.
I totally misread that, but that's really funny that that's how I read it.
Oh.
The day that Dr. Chenoweth was killed, my husband was cutting corn until noon, assisted by Will Mann, his nephew. After dinner, he sat down outside of the door and played with the children for a while, and then went to the peach orchard and got some peaches. He went to town after the mail that evening. The next time I saw him, he came home and struck a match and looked at the clock and went to bed. I looked at the clock also. It was about 25 minutes after 8. Mr. Mann went to sleep soon after he came to bed. I did not go to sleep until after the clock struck 9. I did not know of the death of Dr. Chenoweth until noon the next day. So that's her testimony. He was at home by 8:25.
And in bed after he struck a match.
Yeah. But the doctor was shot somewhere around 8:20, 8:30. He didn't walk 2.5 miles in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's that. Do you believe the wife though?
Exactly. No? That is his wife saying that. So the case went to the jury.
Oh geez.
And on May 5th, the jury returned to report they were hopelessly deadlocked.
Of course.
Shocking. Wow. 6 for conviction and 6 for acquittal. So they were split right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
A new trial was scheduled for August 1884.
We have to go through this again?
Oh, yes. The second trial saw largely the same testimony.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So there's 12 more people completely confused by what's going on. Mann's two leading attorneys, George Hubbert and M.E. Benton, were relentless in their cross-examination of the state's witnesses. With the state's case being purely circumstantial and based on the claims that people heard Mann threaten the doctor some years before the incident, the only thing the defense could really do was impeach those witnesses.
Right.
And they were quite rough with them when they did. The papers noted that they picked them up, picking away pieces of him, turned him upside down over and over again before twisting him into unimaginable shapes.
What?
Unimaginable shapes. That's hard to say. So they're like, they're just picking these people apart. They are like putting them through the ringer whenever they are on cross or when they bring in a rebuttal witness for them. So they're not nice, which they shouldn't be, because like I said, at least two of the witnesses, I fully believe, probably did this. I don't know why.
You think the brothers did it?
Yes, but I don't know why, and there's no motive for me as to why. But if he was that hard on liquor, there were a lot of people who didn't like it because of that. So, but it was very widely believed that they were paid for their testimony.
Hmm.
Absolutely. That right. They actually had put out their services as a witness to the highest bidder in the state one. And that's why they... I mean, it's a real belief on people who have followed this case. Yeah. It's very sad. So, though the defense made a great effort and the case was all circumstantial, completely, this shit would not fly in court today. The second jury came back with a guilty verdict. On August 28th, 1884, Judge McGregor sentenced Mann. This is from the actual sentencing. This is the last piece of what he said to him. It was long. You know, they're long-winded back then. They still are.
They still are. What do you mean? But still.
He said, "And now, Garland A. Mann, the judgment and sentence of the court is that on Friday, the 17th day of October, A.D. 1884, at the hour of 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you be taken from the jail of Newton County and by the sheriff of said county, you be hanged by the neck until you are dead, dead, dead. And may God, the righteous judge and loving father of us all, have mercy upon you."
Wow, that's crazy.
Dead. What the hell?
Bro.
That just seems excessive. And again, to me, speaks to something weird going on here. Why are you so upset? I mean, I understand you. I mean, he's just been convicted of...
Murder,
but... I don't know. That's just... really weird.
It's weird that a judge would say that.
Yeah. And that, like, I mean, that's...
go to that extreme.
Yeah. Dead. He can only dead once, man.
Calm down. He gets the point.
The defense, of course, quickly filed an appeal, and that stayed the execution. While they had several good reasons to file the claim, obviously, there wasn't enough evidence to have a trial, even, in my opinion, from everything that I've seen. And I read the testimony and I'm like, how did we get this far in this trial?
Isn't that
I don't
scary,
understand
though?
It. Yeah. It gets even worse.
Like, my worst fear is being trialed for something I had nothing to do with, and there's nothing you can do but sit there and listen to your verdict.
Yeah.
And you're like, bro, I wasn't even in the same continent. What the hell you mean?
Well, hopefully. The Supreme Court actually chose to overturn the conviction on the grounds that the judge erred in not allowing the defense to challenge prospective witnesses on the basis of their connection to law enforcement.
Oh.
So the conviction was overturned by the Supreme Court.
Good for them.
Yes.
I don't think I've heard a story yet that you've said that they've that actually overturned.
That we have seen where they have lessened the sentence, but yeah, I don't think we've seen one overturned.
That's good.
I don't think we have. Man's third trial was set for May 20th, 1885.
Is he in jail this whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
The testimony was much the same as the other trials. Not much of a change. This time, the newspapers noted the determination of the witnesses that were set on helping him. And how they seemed ready to fight to the end, to be by his side. Aww. Until he got the fair trial.
At least he wasn't alone story was told.
Yeah, until they were like, you can't believe these people. They're probably being paid to say this. The jury was given the case on the 3rd of June. And on the morning of the 4th, the jury announced that they were deadlocked.
No way.
And a mistrial was called again. The next trial was scheduled for August of 1885. Mind you, it has now been almost 2 years.
There's 2 years of sentences he's did.
Well, yeah, but in that day and age, they didn't last that long, you know? The defense motions began on August 3rd, and the court went to recess to summon a jury to reconvene for the trial on August 7th. So we're going to find another 12 people to be on this.
They're running out of people.
I know. So the trial is going to reconvene on August 7th. On August 6th. Some places say around 1 a.m.
What was that?
Some sources said around 1 a.m. Others say in the very early morning hours, which could be the same thing. Sometime in the early morning of August 6th, a mob rode into Neosho.
I was wondering when this was going to come about.
It was estimated there was anywhere from 75 to 150 men.
Wow.
Several of them dismounted. They stuck shotgun barrels through the grates of the windows and demanded that the guards open the door, while others used sledgehammers to try to knock it in. The guards refused to open the doors, but the door gave way to the sledgehammers and the mob rush in. They shoved guns in the faces of the guards demanding to have the keys, while those with hammers went to work on the bars. The guards again refused, even with their lives being threatened, but the bars also gave way to the heavy hammers. The men grabbed Man and he struggled to free himself. But he was shot twice in the body, four times in the head.
Holy crap.
Any of those six shots would have been fatal. The mob then rode out of town after threatening the guards' lives. They had better not tell if they had recognized any of the men in the mob. Or they would come and do the same to them. Wow. The coroner's jury the next day came to the conclusion that Man came to the death at the hands of person or persons unknown. So, he was killed.
Dang it.
And I want to read an article that is disgusting to me, and I want to see what everybody thinks about this. Because, like I said, to me, it's just pretty disgusting, but we'll see. This was in the Joplin Herald right after. I'm not sure when this was in the Joplin Herald, but I didn't get the date off of the paper, but... Anyway, here's what this paper says about this event. Thursday morning about 1 o'clock, the Neosho jail was surrounded by a mob estimated from 100 to 200 persons. That's the only place that said there were that many people. Two guards were stationed on the inside. A shotgun muzzle at the grating was first intimation that the guards had the presence of a mob. The guard on duty was ordered to open the door out the outside door, but being slow in obeying, it was knocked out with a sledge and crowbar. Once inside, the key to Garland Mann's cell was demanded. The guards could not produce it and convinced the mob that it was not in their possession. The lock of the cell was knocked off. Mann was crouched in the corner of his cell. Someone of the mob cried, "Bring on the rope." It was not forthcoming, and a voice said, "Give him lead pills." At this, a volley was fired, and Mann fell riddled with balls. The only words he uttered were, "Oh God." When death was assured, the mob formed and marched quietly away. Near the suburbs, a halt was called. Someone in the crowd announced, "The Mann trial is ended. You can all go home." Garland Mann was under trial for the fourth time for the murder of Dr. A.W. Chenoweth at Pineville about 3 years ago.
Wow, 3 years later.
It wasn't 3 years, but whatever. The murder was a deliberate assassination, shooting his victim from an ambush with a shotgun as he was driving home in his buggy about nightfall. The evidence was circumstantial, but none familiar with it doubted Mann's guilt. By one legal technicality after another, the case has dragged along to a fourth trial. Impatient at the barriers to justice, the people took the law in their hands and did what the courts and a sheriff should have done 2 years ago.
That is harsh.
Yes. And then they end it by saying, "Mob law is deplorable, but the necessity for mob law is doubly so."
That's bad.
Yes. That's disgusting. So, let's just point out the reason that we're at a fifth trial or a fourth trial. It's the fact that you can't trust what anybody's saying. He could not get a fair trial.
Right.
He couldn't. And I'm just curious. I'm really curious. If those men were paid for their testimony, how much did it end up costing when they had to come back three times?
Oh, geez. And they must not be doing a good job because...
But I mean, also, once they give their testimony, then they can face perjury if they say, "Oh, well, I was paid to say that, mm-hmm. So really, they can't come back, or they're going to get in trouble themselves. I just hate this one because I think it's completely, I mean, it's terrible. Also, I want to add that Alice Mann and their children were left with no money and also homeless because the farm was mortgaged for his defense and they lost it. So his wife and six children were left with no money and no home. As they would have been if he'd been hanged, but...
Hey, thanks for throwing that in there.
Yeah. Let's just make it worse, I know.
Just make it all worse.
So what do you think? I mean, what's your opinion on...
Stupid mob. Yeah. Like, who put them in charge? Who let them judge?
Yeah. That's what, you know, it's... I understand. I think we all understand, especially when we see these big cases, when you just know somebody's guilty and they get off. And it's so frustrating. But everybody gets a fair shake. And that's the point of our system. That doesn't mean you're never trying to find the truth in a trial. And that's what people get really confused about, is you're not trying to find the truth. It's a song and dance for who can tell the best, most believable story.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And
whoever wins.
Yeah. It's not about finding the truth. It's what you can make someone believe.
That's scary too.
Yeah, because you don't convict unless it's beyond reasonable doubt. All a defense has to do is plant reasonable doubt. They have to. That's their only thing that they need to do is plant reasonable doubt. But I think there's plenty of reasonable doubt in this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it definitely sounds like these guys were for sale. Their testimony was for sale.
And really sketchy, like you said, like you mentioned.
And like, yeah, their stories are too good. They like, they explain every time they say he said he was going to do this. It's like one other piece of what actually happened. And again, these people are all hanging out, talking with each other.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's tell them.
How do they have the same story? Because they all came up with it together.
Yep.
And they, during cross-examination, they're asked, like, did you ever talk with this person before the trial? Did you ever? And no, they didn't talk about the case. And I'm like, this is the biggest story in town and you didn't talk about it? Bullshit. Like, no, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's disgusting. I think it's terrible. And, you know, it, if he gets away with it, he gets away with it. That's just the, that's just part of it. It happens. That's so when it's your family member sitting in there, then they get a fair shake too. You can't, I mean, if that was somebody related to you that you loved and cared for, you'd want to make sure they were getting a fair trial.
For sure. And it sounds like, I mean, the mob people was really popular back then. Like,
very. We're going to do a really big one soon. On that vigilante kind of stuff. And it ends...
Just a bunch of bullies who decided they're right.
Yeah,
and
self-righteousness
the justice is wrong. And they're going to take control.
Yeah. Like, that is not how our system works. And it works the way it does to protect you when you get in trouble. When something happens, because otherwise somebody makes some kind of false, crazy claim about you. Well, then let's just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We don't need to have a trial, right? Ugh. I mean, somebody's sure of it. That's not how it works. Luckily, that's not how it works.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, think about all of the people who are wrongfully convicted. And how many times
and
it's
still yet these days get wrong.
Yeah, all the time. That's, I mean, what if somebody was wrong and you just killed somebody for no reason except for rumor?
Blah.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of hate starts around just people stirring the pot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They hear something from somebody and it's got to be true. So let's... tell other people.
Yeah. It's gross.
Anyway, the way the world turns.
But yeah, we're going to cover some pretty heavy vigilante stuff coming up. And it's an exciting case. It's like you said, I think it starts with people who have the right intentions and who want to do something good, but they turn and become
what they're against.
All righteous and completely believe there is no higher power, and God, do they pay for it though? I've looked in this case and been researching it for over a year now.
Oh, so it's gonna be a big one.
And yeah, and when I the first time I read it, I cried because of just how tragic.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe not even tragic, it's more like gruesome the ending is.
But until then,
yeah, anyway,
we've had enough sad on this one.
So I know we have a lot of new listeners. We see you. Thank you for
you guys are
coming
awesome.
Along
hope
and
you
I
stick
hope
around.
Yeah, I hope you're enjoying what you're hearing, and please let us know if you have any suggestions or anything like that. We still feel like we're brand new and we're still learning sometimes.
We are definitely still learning.
So anything that you can tell us that would make this better or more enjoyable in some way, we are open to that.
For sure.
Absolutely. Do we have reviews?
We actually have a new one.
Excellent.
Isu gave us 5 stars and put a nice lovely review down for us. So
yes.
Thank you.
It was very sweet.
Your email, and we will get you a sticker.
Mm-hmm. So, also, I want to mention, you said sticker. I finally have got stickers on the way. There's been a lot of stuff going on with that has kept that from happening. So, if we owe you a sticker,
it'll
be
there.
Coming. It's been an ordeal.
Has it, or are you just slacking?
No, it has. Because the stickers, I was very specific on what I wanted for everyone to get. I wanted a square sticker with the bird logo, and
you struggled to get
they cost $1 million to get what I wanted.
Why?
And I was like, why?
We could have done
do square stickers cost so much? Because I could get a round sticker or I could get a rectangle sticker for about a quarter of the price.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird.
So I was like, good Lord.
Just give me my square sticker.
So I finally was able to find something a little more reasonable. Not really, but
we just went with it.
Yeah. I was just like, well, I owe people stickers from like last year. So.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Good you one. Caught that.
Good one.
So we are a week into 2021. What do you think so far?
I don't know a difference. It's still bad. We don't really want to get into that.
Well,
though, do we?
No, I mean, like, we're not going to see things just go poof, gone. It's 2021. 2020's over and everything is rainbows and sunshine.
No, people still crazy. And politics are still going on and COVID's still here. So, blah. Yeah.
It's great.
but we're still here on air.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And we have, so before we actually speak to you in this manner again, we will see you on a Facebook Live on the 16th.
Yes.
We're going to discuss Bertha Gifford. And I'm pretty excited. I'm trying to figure out how to do it. So I'm real honest with you guys because you really are like family now. But I'm trying to figure out how to do it so it's not just me repeating what I said on the podcast because you've already heard that. So, yeah. If you have any ideas of what you think might work,
hopefully there's a few people that choose questions out of what they want to know or what we think and blah, blah, blah.
So, also, I wanted to mention, we've been trying to kind of like talk a little bit after the episode to let y'all know who we are because we just share the stories and that's it pretty much. So I wanted to talk about something really quickly before we end.
Oh Lord.
It probably won't be really quickly because I talk too much. But anyway, the episode of Kindred Spirits that played last night, I only know a short little bit about it because I didn't watch the full episode. I just saw pieces. But
it would be two nights ago when they listened to this.
I know. The episode that was on Saturday night. So I wanted to talk about that one because it was very interesting. So the way I understood what happened, and I really need to watch it, but I don't have cable anymore, so it's moving to Discovery Plus. Yay, and I get to watch it now without having to go to my parents' house. And I'm cheap, that's all. So the way I understand it is they go outside. They make up this story, like a backstory and everything for this ghost that is maybe in this area.
It's a kid ghost.
Yes. And so they create this entire story for this ghost, completely fabricated.
Like sister's name, mom and dad's name, and like the dad died in the Civil War. They made all this up. And then they went inside.
To talk
about it.
To talk about it and get EVPs and stuff like that. And the spirit that interacted with them completely went along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And
they even said, like, Amy was like, let's say such and such spirit's favorite device is the K2. And the spirit went along with it. Started playing with the K2 meter. And it was
they created a haunting in a few minutes and just went in and validated their own creation.
So tell me what you think about that. My thoughts is that it's a kid spirit. Mm-hmm. They mentioned maybe he was like, oh, well, that's who I am. Or, oh, okay. So my parents were named blah, blah, blah. So we're not going with that. But would a adult do that, or would the adult stand their ground?
Right, because a child is always wanting to please you and going to do what you ask.
And maybe that kid spirit doesn't know his history or whatever. So mm-hmm. he just went like, okay, cool. I heard you them talk about this. So when they asked me,
yeah,
that's who I am.
That makes a lot of sense. But it also, and like I said, I haven't watched the episode, so I don't, I can't speak to like what they actually were going for. But my,
yeah, I may or may not have watched it at work last night.
My theory on it is the intention and filling the space with what you know, or the intention that you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
The intention of like your intention in the space, and that creates what you want. And I think that's fascinating because I've thought for years, all these places that are super haunted, how many of these air quote ghosts are completely fabricated by all of the people, thousands, who believe in them? You take that kind of collected energy mm-hmm. and push it into something. How could you not think that that would create something?
That's a whole game changer, though.
It is. I love that.
Oh,
I absolutely love it. Because it's the we think that maybe this is the spirit of someone, but maybe not. Maybe we did that. Maybe we made that. And that is super cool. And it's also something we were talking about this earlier. We talked real briefly because we wanted to make sure we were talking on here about this. But we were talking about the Bertha Gifford being at Morris Mill Hotel and how that makes no sense to me. I don't condemn anybody who thinks that or has witnessed that. But that to me explains why Bertha Gifford would be at Morris mm-hmm. Mill Hotel, because everyone wants her to be so mm-hmm. badly. And so they have created mm-hmm. this persona of this spirit who just passes off as Bertha Gifford, because why wouldn't she? I mean, she has been, the whole space has been filled full of people wanting so badly, sitting in the dark, wanting so badly to talk to Bertha Gifford. And you pour that amount of energy into something and it creates, mm-hmm. there's Bertha Gifford at the Morris Mill Hotel. When, like I've said in the past, Bertha Gifford worked there for a year. That's it. That's her tie to the Morris Mill Hotel. That's it. I've worked places for a year and there's no fucking way I'm going to haunt them.
Calm down.
I'm just saying, not going to do it. But
some places, though, I don't know. I'm on the fence because it's like not the whole Morris Mill one, but like what if, I don't know, some places that it's actual to the actual spirit there, and now you're all of a sudden think it's because we brought it there.
Yeah, I don't think that that's probably the case all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be the case all of the time.
Just stop now.
I mean, I think, I don't know. And also, when you come into a space, you don't know what energy and what has been said, all of that in the space before you got there.
Right.
You know, what person has been sitting around talking about somebody, talking about a story of somebody who used to live there or something, and they build this energy that then somebody comes in and wants to do an investigation, find out what's going on, and oh well, here's the history, so we push that into their minds and then it becomes something bigger. It makes so much sense to me that that could be what's going on. I don't know that that would be that explains everything. But I do think these big places that are investigated over and over and over and over again by thousands of people, definitely. There are some, maybe, and I don't know if it's technically a talpa, but it's something similar that, it's just a creation by us in trying to get what we want out of that space. Just think of the excitement when you go into a place. Like we talked about that when we went into
Pythian.
How we were just singing with excitement, and the crazy activity that we got
mm-hmm.
was constant that first time we went in there. And I think we were a little calmer the next time. We didn't get as much. Well, I mean, we got some really cool stuff, but you remember the people who got the most activity were the people who were there the very first time
and were most excited. Mm-hmm.
And that to me, says there's something to that. There's something to the energy that you bring to a space.
So we need to get it amped up every time we go somewhere. Yeah.
And again, we walked into that space and somebody said, I feel like the name Michael comes to me here. And then what did they find out later? The spirit told them that his name was Michael. Could that have been the same thing?
I don't know. We need to test this.
Yeah.
Make up some crazy story and go somewhere and investigate.
Yeah.
Stand by, guys. We will definitely.
I think it's so fascinating. Yeah, I don't know. I like I said, I think that there's probably a lot of things that are not that way, but I do think it can be. We can account for some of them, such as Bertha Gifford and Morrisville mm-hmm. Hotel. That one, as soon as I saw this experiment, I was like,
that's bam. Mm-hmm.
That's why Bertha is at Morrisville Hotel, because somebody has created her there. Mm-hmm. And then God, that makes so much sense. I love it.
In. All the people kept flowing in and doing yeah. the same thing over and over.
Yeah. And yeah, when you're sitting there wanting so badly for something to happen, the excitement, the nervousness, the energy that is
like, come on.
Yeah. That anxiety that's building, that's doing something. It's going somewhere because it wears you out when you leave there. Anyway, that was something I wanted to talk about because I thought that was super cool. And anytime we can talk about something that's like new and happening in the field, I want to talk about it because blew my mind, and I loved that they did that that's what I love about them is they're not going to do the same thing as everyone else ever.
Yep. They love Adam and Amy.
They push everything and they try to come up with these new experiments and go places that nobody else will go. And I think that's why I think Greg and Dana Newkirk being with them and working with them so much has opened them to a lot of this because they'll try anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're cray cray.
Yeah. I mean, in a good way, we love that. But I think it's really cool that they're open to that because no other investigative show would have done that.
Mediums.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing their thing with the crowd and they pick you out. Are they picking up on what's on your mind? Like, I lost my mother. Do you think me thinking about that and like, oh, such and such could be here with me or such and such could be with me. You think that's why mediums pick up
maybe
certain people?
I don't know. I don't understand mediums.
It just flows in the same.
I have so area. Many questions about like how they get what they get. And I've read the books and I've listened to the podcasts about mediums and everything. And I'm still like, I don't get it. Like
that's a whole nother episode.
How does it pick you? How do you, mm-hmm. Like you said, in a room full of people, stop and say that's the one that they're talking about?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But I do think that you can be, I mean, if you are sitting in a room with a medium, you are going to be concentrating on your mother and waiting to hear from her. So it would make sense that they would say, I got your mom.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
That makes total sense. But I don't know. I mean, I think it would be interesting to see somebody sitting there who couldn't really say they've lost somebody close to them. Because there are people in the world who...
Really?
Yeah. And just see what happens.
I don't know.
Because I think it would be interesting to see if they could pick up on anything.
I can't see anybody in the world not lost somebody they loved.
No, not somebody they've loved, but somebody who has been like, earth shattering, heartbreaking, hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, I mean, a lot of people have had that. But some people haven't. Some people have never lost people close to them like that. Probably younger people, but.
Anyway.
Good times.
We could go on forever and talk about
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. So, welcome to 2021. World's still crazy, but. We get to do this every week, and that's great, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, next week we'll talk about ghosties, and we will see you on our Facebook Live on Saturday. Yeah. We are so excited to see everybody.
Can't wait.
Come with questions. Give us suggestions on how you'd like to see the show formatted, if you have any suggestions. I just want to make sure it works for everybody.
We'll make it work.
Yeah.
We'll struggle for the first 10 minutes.
Technically, it will not work right at all. Like, technologically speaking,
never does.
It will not go right. So just be aware that that will happen. And thanks for listening. Again, thank you so much for listening and for coming back. Listening to this when you came back, leave us a review. And we promise we have stickers now. We'll send you one. So have a great week and we'll see you on Saturday. And
stay safe, guys.
Yeah, we love you.
Bye.
Bye.